Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 187 of CJ Evolution. Pat Fitzgibbons here, host and creator of the show. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, thank you for tuning in. I know you're very busy. You got your life. Maybe you're on you're commuting right now, going to or from work, working out, whatever you are doing. Your time is valuable, so thank you once again for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. Special thanks again to all those first responders out there, brave men and women, working in the criminal justice field, protecting us day in and day out. It does not go unnoticed. You have much support out there. I don't care what you hear on the news or what you're reading. You have tons of support. Keep up the fantastic work. You know, it always fascinates me how people can have one profession, one full-time profession, and then do something truly amazing on the side that really inspires people, motivates people, and above all, makes people laugh. My next guest, Dwayne Gill, is all that. He's a triple threat. He's an amazing guy. You're going to enjoy the show. He is a former Marine. He is a state trooper and comedian, all wrapped up into one. So I give you the one, the only, Dwayne Gill. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have Dwayne Gill on the show today. If you don't know who he is, he's a former United States Marine, state trooper, comedian, and motivational speaker. Welcome, Dwayne. Glad you're here, sir.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Patrick. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's an honor for you to be on the show. I'm glad you... I know you're very busy. You travel. You do a lot of stuff, and I'm glad you're here, sir. Yeah. I gave you a little background of who you are, sir. Can you tell us again... a little bio of yourself, and welcome.
Sure. Thank you for having me again so much. I'm excited to be here. Well, as you mentioned, I'm from Detroit originally. Mm-hmm. I'm a former Marine. I know we don't usually say former Marines, but I served 10 years in the Marine Corps from the time I was 17 to 27. I traveled all over the world. I was in Okinawa, Japan. I was in Beirut, Lebanon. I did some time on the mean streets of Detroit. I was actually a recruiter for many years in Detroit. I kicked a bunch of people through the goalposts of life. And I did that for some time. And then I decided after 10 years I wanted to get out and I wanted to serve in another way. My best friend became a state trooper, and his name is Eddie Washington Jr. He eventually became the colonel of the state police, the director. Mm-hmm. And I went on a ride along with him July 4th, 1985, and I got hooked. So when I got out of the Marine Corps in 1991, state police was not hiring, so I got a job with the Ann Arbor Police Department. Mm-hmm. I worked there for 2 years. After 2 years of service with Ann Arbor, the state police came calling. I joined the MSP, and I've been a Michigan State Trooper for the past 25 years. During that time as a trooper, I remember in the academy, they used to always say, hey, you know, you should do something outside of police work so you don't become jaded, you don't become cynical about the job. As you know, they say find a hobby, find something to do outside police work. So I found stand-up comedy. I started doing stand-up comedy back in 1995. I was okay at it for a little while. I quit for about 7 years to concentrate on my job. I came back to it in 2002. I went professional in 2004. Mm-hmm. And been doing stand-up comedy ever since. And then I transitioned into some motivational speaking, teaching a little bit of leadership, also talking about overcoming adversity. Because as you know, in police work, we all have different type of mountains that we have to get over to climb and get over, and problems that we have to solve. And I like to talk about it because, as we talked about earlier before we recorded, does your department ever give you any grief about you doing stand-up comedy? Well, I got some stories about that.
we're cops, Dwayne. You know that cops can be brutal. I know they can.
Oh, man. Gosh, they sure can be. And I actually, when I really got started doing stand-up, I was on the governor's detail. I used to be a Governor Granholm security guy here in Michigan at the time. And she used to tell me, hey, remember who you are and what you represent. And that's fine. I remember that. And I can do clean comedy. I can do dirty. I can do whatever. Mm-hmm. But my department, they kicked me off the governor's detail at the time, threatened me, sent me back to a post, a uniform assignment, and said, if you act up, we're going to put you on a midnight shift. You never do comedy again. Well, fortunate enough, I got a day slot. I worked Monday through Friday, 8 to 4, and my comedy really just took off.
Yeah.
And every time they tried to knock me down, Patrick, I always got up swinging, and I got better. So, you know, my story is a good story.
Well, that is so. And first of all, thank you for your service. Thank you for thank you for your law enforcement service, your continued service, and thank you for being a proud member of the Marine Corps. And I love what you just said right there, Dwayne, about, and we're going to talk about that. I want to get more into your comedy in a little bit. But yeah, you got it. You got to get up, man. You know that. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir, but so many people, Dwayne, you know, once they fall that first time, they don't get up. And that is the make or break point, right?
Yes, it is, sir. I couldn't agree more.
I mean, you have to keep going, man. Nobody, you know, you've heard fail forward. I mean, nobody, you know, Elon Musk, any of these successful people out there, they didn't wake up one day and just became successful. They had to, you know, get back on that horse.
You got to get back on that horse, man. And I'll give you a quick story. In 1995, in April, I did a comedy show in Detroit at a place called the State Theater. 1,500 people there, drunk, rowdy crowd. I was in like an Apollo Night Theater type of environment where if you're not funny, you're going to get booed off the stage. I had my whole family there, friends, colleagues, went on stage, told the first joke. They laughed. I hesitated because I couldn't remember the second joke, and the crowd turned on me like wild animals in friggin' Africa.
Oh,
it went crazy. They booed me off the stage. It was the worst experience ever. But again, I quit for 7 years.
Yeah.
And then I said, I'm going to concentrate on a day job. I never want to go through that experience again. But what I did was 7 years later, I went to a retirement party at a comedy club, saw these other guys, said, I'm funnier than them. I can do this again. And so what I did was, and that's one of the keys that I talked to in my speaking, I educated myself on what I wanted to do. I educated, I learned, I went back to the drawing board. I found out what made people successful in comedy. I read books. I took a class. I did whatever it took for me to get that confidence to go back up. And I went back up on stage on September 11th, 2002. And I've been doing it ever since. So I just wish that I wouldn't have quit back then.
Yeah. And you know, I say this a lot, Dwayne. Sometimes you got to change who you associate with. I mean, because I'm not trying to pick on cops. I'm a cop. You're a cop. But some cops out there are, and some of these cops are my good friends I've known for years, but some of them are just negative, and you can't be around that negativity all the time.
Woo.
You can't. I mean, because it's, you know, I mean, again, you gotta kind of change the scenery. And if, you know, you can definitely limit your associations. And I'm, you know, my point, I'm thinking more of myself, is there was a point in my life where I just had to, start getting other friends outside of law enforcement. Not that everybody in law enforcement was negative, but I needed out people outside to show me that not everybody outside law enforcement is a bad guy. There's a lot of good people out there. you know that. And so
awesome,
you just gotta look at who you surround yourself with.
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. There's awesome people out there, and I'm so fortunate in my life that I've got so many different circles of friends. I got a circle of friends from high school, a circle of friends from the Marines, circle of friends in law enforcement. Now I got a brand new circle in stand-up comedy. Yeah. And these guys are awesome. I mean, except for the guys that smoke weed all the time. And I don't judge them, but, you know, that's a whole other story, you know. But I love it, man. And it's really opened up my eyes to a lot of different things.
Now, what made you become, what made you go into the Marine Corps? And what made you, because it seems like you've always said that, you know, calling for service, you know.
Okay.
I mean, the Marines and law enforcement. What made you take that route?
That's a great question. Growing up in Detroit, my father was a World War II veteran. Mm-hmm. And when I used to go over to my grandmother's house, she had a picture of him on her nightstand of him in his uniform. And from the time I could walk, I used to always look at that picture and see my dad. And I always looked up to him, saw that he served in the Army Air Force at the time. And I wanted to be just like him. So as I grew up, I found out that I could not get an education in Detroit. So I was in the Boy Scouts, and I saw military schools in the back of this Boy's Life magazine. And I came to my parents one day and I said, hey, I want to go to this military school. They're like, you want to go to a private military school? I said, yes. It was called Florida Air Academy. I went there from the age of 10 to 11 years old to 14. I went there from the sixth grade to the ninth. It was in Plantation, Florida. And I'm glad it wasn't Lynchburg, Virginia, by the way. And that's a joke. That's
I know.
A joke,
I saw it. Glad... I didn't want.
You can laugh at it. Okay. Right? No joke. So I went to this military school, and it was a great experience in my life. And then it got a little bit expensive for my parents to send me there. So I came back home, went to high school in Detroit, was a member of the junior ROTC. And actually, I had a nomination to go to West Point. But when I started hanging around the wrong crowd, doing a few stupid things, I ended up just go ahead and decide to enlist in the Marines.
Yeah.
So I had that service mindset from day one. I had that leadership mindset from the time I was 11 years old. Yeah. I had different leadership assignments when I was at military school. It was just like the movie Taps.
Yeah.
You know, so then when I went to high school, I was the battalion commander in ROTC. So, you know, this has just been an ingrained part of my life for 50 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's what happened.
And that's awesome. I was in the Army. I was down at Fort Bragg, so I remember, you know, working with a lot of Marines and good, just great guys. I mean, I knew a couple of Marine Force Recon guys, and it was an awesome experience working with those guys. How it went, kind of changing topics a little bit, Dwayne. I mean, you've seen law enforcement out throughout the years. I mean, you're in law enforcement. How has it changed since you first became, you know, a trooper?
Well, that's that. I tell you, I really like talking to you because, again, you're hitting all the points. Mm-hmm. It has changed a lot, and I think you can agree with it, too. I first came into law enforcement in 1991, and you know how it was back then, mm-hmm. man. We worked hard. We partied hard. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to have choir practice. You know, remember those days? Mm-hmm. You know, you catch the kids with some beer. Instead of writing them a ticket, you let them go, but you take their 12-pack or case and you guys have practice and drink it yourself. Right? Right?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't Can't let this evidence go to waste.
Right. You know, didn't have cameras.
Yeah.
We didn't have tasers. We had a gun, we had your handcuffs, and we had your mouth to get you out of situations. Mm-hmm. As times changed, you know, they got more serious about it. You couldn't do the things that we used to do back then. I think that with the advent of people, especially in my department, with take-home cars and not coming to the post anymore and having briefing and having that camaraderie on a basic level, you know, as a team, and now everybody's an individual, and now everybody's out for themselves, and then we're taking the hits out in public because we're losing the trust of our community. Yeah. We're losing the battle of the trust of our community by stupid things that are happening by individuals in departments that sometimes don't get trained to the standards that maybe you and I have, or don't make the right decisions that maybe that you and I have made over the years. And it's shedding a bad light on the profession of law enforcement. So I always say we need to get back to the basics. We need to get back to hands-on leadership. Mm-hmm. We need to get back to good supervision and teaching these kids. And I call them kids because I'm 54. You teach these kids in the academy about ethics, about doing the right thing, about making the right decisions and whatnot. Because I can remember working undercover, seeing my colleagues mistreat African-Americans wrongly and not saying something.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it takes intestinal fortitude to be able to stand up, and it takes administrative courage. But that took time for me to learn that. And I have it now, and we need to go back, and we need to educate our peers and our subordinates how to have that administrative courage, how to have that intestinal fortitude to call out a wrong, okay? That needs to happen. And I think that has been the big changes in law enforcement, because we don't have old school people mentoring the young cops of today.
Yeah, and I agree. And you know, Dwayne, and I think we're on the same page. I tell people this all the time, because there is a lot of bad press out there about law enforcement. Now, you know, some of it's well-deserved.
Yes.
Some of it is well-deserved. Yes. But I think the overwhelming majority of officers, brave men and women, are doing a great job out there in a very difficult environment. And like you, I think we need to get back to the basics. This is a time whenever something happens in law enforcement where we get some bad press. That's not the time where we go back in our shell. That's when the time we have to get out there and connect with the community again.
Absolutely.
And we're not just again, but keep connecting with the community. I don't care if you work in, you know, NYPD or LAPD or whatever. It doesn't matter, because that's what's going to bring the public trust back. You know, there's going to be a percentage of people that just don't like the cops, whatever you do.
Right. Yeah, whatever you do. Absolutely.
But you have to go out there, and I agree with you 100%. I wish we would focus more on this in the academy, because you know the academies are just jam-packed. They got curriculums. They got, the state mandates so much stuff that they got to.
Yeah.
And I wish we would, focus more on this. And emotional wellness, taking care of yourself, as an officer.
Yes, sir.
Because, we're working crazy shifts, that.
Mm-hmm.
We hit on a little bit of the challenges. Any other challenges you think that we're going to face in law enforcement in the future?
Well, I think that we're going to, one of the big challenges that I know that I face in my department is finding qualified candidates.
Oh, that's everywhere, buddy.
Right? Qualified, diverse candidates that reflect the communities that we serve in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we used to get 10,000 applications a year. Now we're down to maybe 1,000. I mean, it's just ridiculous because nowadays kids have so many other opportunities, and it's not a lot of them that want to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when it comes from protected populations like women and African-American males or Latino males, that have had negative experiences with police. They don't want to serve. I mean, believe me, I have had many negative encounters with the police, even as a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
I've been pulled over for DWB, driving while black, on several occasions. The minute I let them know I'm the police, I'm good now, okay? But I feel sad for young people who don't have a get-out-of-jail badge like me.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to continue to educate. We need to really beat the bushes and find those people. We need to plant the seeds in them as they're young, have the explorer groups, have the kids in high school that have an interest in service in law enforcement, because this is a challenge that we're going to have tomorrow, but we're having that today.
Mm-hmm.
We're having that today. I mean, is your department very diverse?
No, I wish we were more diverse. But that's something that we need to work on. We need to get more diverse. Now our population, in where I work is mainly Caucasian, but still we can bring in diversity. But like I said, we've had those candidates that have applied with us, and it wasn't because of their skin color or, their ethnicity. They just didn't, either some of them just pull out of the process or they don't make it as far in the process. But we do encourage, it doesn't matter what color your skin, who you are, every department is hurting and we want that diversity like you. But I think going a step further, we need to get rid of the people who believe in, well, that guy's black, I'm going to pull him over. Or that guy's Hispanic, I'm going to pull him over. We need to get those people out of our ranks, Dwayne, you know that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that we were definitely been on the right track with the Justice Department doing the unbiased policing initiatives and things like that. My department's been trained in unbiased based policing. I think that we need to continue to do that, but it seems right now with the political chaos that we're having, that some of that stuff is dropped by the wayside. We need to make sure that we still do that, and that we train our officers to be unbiased. But we need those people out, and it's unfortunate though that a lot of those bad eggs are still in, and those are the bad eggs that get the press. You hardly see good stories about a guy like me who's out here trying to humanize the badge.
I don't know about that. Dwayne, now I know I don't know you well that well, but you're out here, and this is what's important. When we have shows like this, because you're not only a stand-up comedian, but you also talk about leadership and overcoming adversity. And I think you do change more than because you're out there in the public forum and you're talking about stuff like this. And yeah, you're talking about comedy too, but you're talking about leadership and you're talking about having to overcome adversity. We're having this show right now, which is another way where people get educated, right? People get educated and they say, wait a minute, I just listened to two cops on the CJ Evolution podcast and they're actually talking about stuff that I believe in.
That's good.
So I think you do more, you do a lot, man. I mean, I know you know that, but you're out there, and it takes a brave person like yourself to get up there, especially being a cop, man, getting up there and doing stand-up. But I think that humanizes the badge too, because as well as I do, Dwayne, there's a lot of people out there that, cops are just, they're like, hell, it's us against them. They just drive around in their cars. And I think you bring a human side to that, which is great. because we need more people like you out there, you know, and other cops, you know, humanizing the badge, because that's what's going to change, in my opinion, my humble opinion, that's what's going to change some of the views about law enforcement.
Yes, and I appreciate it, and I'm out here, and that's what I'm trying to do, you know, because it's about fair and impartial policing. Mm-hmm. It's about unbiased policing. It's about going out there and serving the public. And the other thing that I talk about too, with all the shootings and all the things going on in the world today, you know, there is a need to be warriors. I get that, but there's also a need to be guardians of our community.
Yeah.
We need to pick up the reason why we're there, to be guardians of the community. We need to be warriors when we have to, okay? And we have to step up. We have to go in and do what we have to do. But on the most part, we need to be guardians too. And sometimes I think that we forget that.
Yeah, and I don't like using the term balance, but that's the term that's coming to mind. We need to be able to shift our priorities as they mm-hmm. come up. You know what I mean? So okay, yes. we're all trained, you know, to have that warrior ethos. But yeah, you're right. Now we need to, okay, we still have that, you know, that warrior mindset. We can put it in the back of our mind to go and engage in community members and listen to community concerns and talk about, you know, some of the issues that community members have. And I think we're getting better, at least where I'm, I can't speak for any other department out there. I think my department's getting better with that.
Good.
Where we're listening more, because we are an information business, Dwayne, you know that. If we don't have information from the public, if we don't listen to their concerns, how are we supposed to change?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think we're both on the same page when it comes to this, you know. And one of the other things that I just want to say real quick is that we have to own it.
Oh, exactly.
We got to own it. We got to own it, man. One of my favorite books right now is called Extreme Ownership. Are you familiar with this book?
Jocko Willink. Yeah.
Yes, Jocko and them. I had a chance to interview him. Great guy. Those two guys are amazing. Extreme Ownership, how U.S. Navy SEALs lead and win. And it's awesome. And I know a lot of the members in my department have been reading their book and listening to their podcasts. And I think that if we can, when we make mistakes, we need to get out front. We need to own it. We need to learn from it. And we need to move on.
Yeah.
You know,
one of my favorite quotes from his book, and you know what, because you've read the book, is there's no such thing as bad teams, right? There's bad leaders.
Bad leaders. You're right.
You know, and when I first started, you know, telling people about this, they were looking at me like I had a second head, and they're like, wait a minute. No, it's not, it's not my fault. I'm a great leader. No. You got to read this book and listen to how he explains it.
Yes, sir.
So,
and I think that is a good, a reminder of some of the issues that are going on out here in law enforcement with these cops that are just doing stupid stuff. They lack a good leader that tells them no.
Well,
that is not acceptable.
They lack a good leader, and I think it starts in the FTO program, you know, in their training program. And who the hell are these guys getting influenced by? And that's a leadership issue, at least, you know, for you. You're in a leadership position, and me to say, hey, I mean, kind of look, you know, getting deep into this a little bit, but okay, what's our FTO program like? What is our training program like? Do we have the right people for these young guys and girls coming into the department? Do we have, are we pairing them with the right FTOs? Are we getting them paired? Because if I have some guy that is cynical or who's a bad egg, who talks crap about the department and this, he's not going to be an FTO in my department.
Right.
He's not.
Right.
And that's where it starts too, is you get these young officers coming in. They need to be with the best people. I'm not going to pair them with the person who's pissed off all the time.
No, because that'll affect them.
Of course it will.
Affect them. Yeah, and it leaves an imprint on their mind on how they're supposed to be.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you know, you can learn things from good leaders. You can learn things from bad leaders.
Yep.
You know, but some of the bad leaders, you take those examples of bad leadership and you get rid of it and you just follow the good ones. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. You got this.
All righty, sir. I'm going to ask you a question. You talk about mountains and valleys as it comes to when we're talking about overcoming diversity. Can you explain what that means?
Well, I use mountains as a metaphor for problems that we have in life. And a lot of times what happens is for us to get to the mountain, we have to go through the deep, dark valleys. We got to go through the valleys of problems, issues, and things of that nature, that when we get ready to tackle a problem, and just like mountain people, when they climb mountains, They have to get through the valley. They have to climb up the mountain to get to the top. To enjoy it, the success of overcoming it. A lot of times, you know, I mean, the old cliche is, you know, why do you climb a mountain? It's because it's there, you know?
Yeah.
Why do you have issues and problems? They're going to come throughout life. But what you have to know is you got to know how to tackle those problems, how to get on top of it so that you can enjoy the view once you reach your goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what my keynote is all about, is enjoying the view from the top. And once you go through the adversity, because a lot of times, and as you know, we all as humans go through problems, trials and tribulations and adversity. And you always hear those cliches when you're in those problems. You know, God don't put things on you more than you can handle, right?
Yeah.
You hear the cliches.
Yeah.
You hear them say all this stuff. But at the time when they're saying this stuff, you're going through that crap.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you don't want to hear that. But you know what? You have to deal with it, because I'm going to tell you, it is so much sweeter once you get through it. Let me give you a quick example. I used to be the legislative liaison for the Department of Michigan State Police, which means I was the lobbyist for our department. Mm-hmm. It was a high profile job. I worked directly for our colonel. I loved the job. I loved interacting with our legislators, the governor's office, senators, reps, making policy for law enforcement. I enjoyed that. Reading bills, helping introduce them. I enjoyed that. However, I had a lot of people in my agency who had a professional jealousy, and they didn't like what I did outside of work, you know, by bringing joy and happiness to people. And so they knocked me down off of that mountain. They knocked me off. I lost that job. I just lost it. I had a captain that doesn't like me. To this day, he persuaded her.
Why are people like that, man? I mean, they don't like that other people get successful and they're rising. Oh, and then, I mean, it's just crazy. I just don't get it.
I don't either, you know, but it's happened. It's happened to me my entire career.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I always make lemons out of lemonade. And I said, you know what? If I can't do this job anymore, you know, I'm going to do the best job I can where you put me. So they put me into recruiting. And that was really a godsend, because once I got into recruiting, I realized this is where I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was at this point where I wanted to be, but God puts you where you need to be. And I need to be here so that I can help develop, mentor, and train the new, young, diverse people coming into our department and give them a positive outlook on what the Michigan State Police is about and help diversify the department for the future.
Yeah.
So this is where I'm at now, and this is where I need to be, and this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that the outcome was like this, you know? Yeah. And I always get up. I always get up.
Well, I mean, and you've got the right mindset, Dwayne. I mean, you have to get into that mindset. And I always try to start out my day with like gratitude. You know, I get up in the morning, I meditate, and I always try to find three things that I'm grateful for. And it could be as simple as just waking up and being alive. Most of the time it is.
Amen. Yeah, yes,
but you have, it starts with the right mindset. You have the mindset. And that's why, you know, that's why you're successful. It's because so many people out there, they stay in that rut, Dwayne, you know that, and they wallow in that self-pity, and they wallow in that jealousy, and they wallow in that whatever, self-doubt, and that's where they stay, man. You know that.
Yes,
if whatever you put out in the universe, that's what you're going to get back, right?
Yes, sir, absolutely. And they put out negative stuff all the time, and that's exactly what they're going to get back. And you know what? It's sad for them. But I keep moving forward, and
that's all you can do.
And I take advantage of opportunities that are in front of me. So hey, it's America.
Who were your mentors growing up? I'm just interested. And I know your dad was a big hero of yours, and that's admirable. Any other mentors that you had growing up?
Oh, I've had plenty of mentors in my life, from my ROTC instructors who taught me the basic fundamentals of leadership when I was a cadet in the junior ROTC, a guy named Staff Sergeant Easley and Staff Sergeant Lewis when I was in ROTC in high school. And then my mentors in the Marines, had a bunch of different leaders in the Marines that I looked up to. But one of my biggest mentors, and even to this day, was another former director of the state police. His name is Tadario Sturtevant. He was the colonel of the state police from about 2003 to like 2007 or so, 4 or 5 years. And he has been a big, and to this day, he's just a mentor in my life. He's somebody that I call when I have issues or I have problems that I want to talk to him about. He's always lending me his ear. He's one of my fraternity brothers. I'm a member of the Kappa Alpha Psi Incorporated fraternity. And he's somebody I definitely look up to. Him and some other folks. But
Awesome.
So I'm very fortunate that directors, I know about three or four retired directors of the state police that I still can call on and ask them questions. You know, they're retired. They're old school guys like you and I. And but we're still there. We're still there.
Now, what's your, I'm interested to know what successful people such as yourself, what their daily routine is, or what does your morning routine look like? You know, I not that you don't have to read too much into it, but I'm always interested. How do you start your morning? How does Dwayne Gill get up in the morning? How do you start your morning?
Well, let me tell you, I'm glad you asked that question because I'm kind of like you. You know, I get up about 5:45, and after I read that book, Extreme Ownership, I decided that, you know what? If we got an academy going right now, I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to go work out with the recruits. And that's what I do every single morning. I get up in the morning. My training academy is about 10 minutes from my house. I pack my bag. My wife is nice enough to make me a lunch. And I go to the training academy. And I'm there at 5:15 when they hit the gym at 5:30. And I'm in the back of the gym and I'm doing push-ups, sit-ups, burpees. I'm running. I'm doing everything right along with those recruits.
That is awesome.
And I do it for two reasons. One, I do it obviously for my fitness. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to get me in the right mindset for the day. But I also do it because those are the kids that I recruited to join the state police. And I want them to see me in the morning, that this old sergeant, 54 years old, still gets up and gets down with them.
Yeah.
Every single
That's
morning.
So important, man. They lead by example.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's what I do in the morning.
That is awesome. Any special projects you got going on? Maybe a book in the future? Because I think every cop has a good story, has a good book in them.
You know, I've always flirted with the idea of writing one, and I definitely do want to write a book, and it's definitely in the future. However, the comedy has really been taking off. I shot a pilot last year for a TV show called Joe versus Joe. Mm-hmm. And it's about a self-made man, kind of like myself, who is a media mogul. And he's got a great relationship with his daughters. And his older daughter comes home from school, and she's moving back in. And she brought home a boyfriend with her. And his name happens to be Joe. and he was in the Marine Corps like me. And it's kind of like the things that we go through trying to get to know each other. We shot the pilot last year and it should debut this May.
Yeah.
And then I'm also helping others. I got a good friend of mine who just came up with an idea for a web series called Wasted in Detroit, where she's a transplant from Phoenix. And her and her husband came here from Phoenix. He's a doctor. And she found out that Detroit has about 300 bars in this 10-mile square area. And her job is to visit each and every bar and find out which is the best one to get wasted at Detroit. Yeah. So she asked me to come on her show. We just shot first episode Tuesday, and it's just fun stuff. So as a comedian, you got to make your own content. As a speaker, obviously, I got to make some content in a book eventually. But I definitely want to get the lessons down that I've learned, because I have been successful. But I'm still living life. I'm still living it, and I'm really enjoying it, Patrick.
Now, how do people find you? If people want to reach out to Dwayne Gill, how do they find you?
Well, they can find me anyways. I've got my own website called DwayneGill.com. And as you probably went to it, you can see I've got two sides. I got Dwayne Gill Speaker, Dwayne Gill Comedy. Whatever side you're interested in, you click on. I'm also on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Dwayne L. Gill, Twitter.com. I'm also on Instagram at The Comedy Cop. The Comedy Cop. And you can find me anywhere. You can find me right there.
Well, Dwayne Gill, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the show. It truly was an honor. You're an inspiration. Keep doing a great job. We at CJ Evolution support you. If there's anything we can ever do to you're already successful, but to help you become more successful, you let me know, brother.
Okay. Well, please have me back on, brother.
I will. I will, Dwayne.
I appreciate it.
All right. You take care, sir.
You too.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.